There's a double interpretation. First, in terms of the quintic X, general quintic in P4, collabial 3 manifold, then these NDs are numbers of rational curves counted in the right virtual way. And it is also a mirror quintic Picard-Fuchs equation. So this operator is Picard-Fuchs equation for a family of varieties over P1, and we have seen this family often by taking the Dwork pencil, dividing out a group and resolving singularities. We have the Hodge numbers 101, and then they get interchanged. So you get here a family of Collabial threefolds with H12 equal to 1. Now, so this is very remarkable, and of course, in general, if you start from such a family of Collabial manifolds, which H12 is 1, you get from it integral variation of Hodge structures of weight 3 with Hodge numbers 1, 1, 1, 1, and from such a variation one gets what I call a CY3 operator. So this is a class of operators which axiomatize the properties we have for the operator P. So this was introduced by Almqvist, Zugilin, and then von Enkevoort and von Straten. So what is it? Well, the definition is not completely stable, but so it is, at first it is a differential operator. So of order 4, say with rational coefficients, and in written in the logarithmic differential t, so it has a maximal unipotent point at the origin, then it should reflect the fact that we have here a self-dual situation, so say p is symplectic, saying there is an invariant symplectic form on the solution space. Better would be saying that the differential Galois group of this operator is SP4, to exclude the cases where you get into a subgroup. Then, so you can write down a sort of a generic form for operators with properties 1 and 2, but requiring that there is a solution with integral power series is a kick-out criterion. So this is very seldom. So finding P's with 1, 2, and 3 is very difficult. There is no universal way. Nevertheless, we ask for further integrality properties. And here there are some variations possible. Say, you might require that these NDs are in Z. Indeed, you can find operators 1, 2, 3, which do not have 4. So, yes, it's a skew polynomial. Yes, of course, it's a polynomial. Huh? In the situation where we have a three-dimensional family of Collabial threefolds, there is on the third cohomology there will be a symplectic form, and there is an invariant symplectic, the intersection form. So you are in this situation. So we compiled a list which now contains over 400 cases of such operators. And it starts with the 14 cases. Of hypergeometric. Which are the simplest type of operators, generalizing the one which one is there, and which was shown by Chuck in this talk. And then it goes on, and you get more and more wild operators. You can look in the paper. The most complicated operator will occupy almost one page to write out. Let me give a less, rather simple one, but not hypergeometric. Two theta plus one squared, two theta plus three squared. So it is a differential operator and has now three terms rather than two, so it's not hypergeometric. In fact, there are four singular points. This family of this differential operator has four singular points. It has an integral solution with general coefficient. It's sort of a priori type. An. And then the function. An. Tn. Killed by this. Now, from this operator, so the question is what family belongs to it? Is there an X? Is there a Y? In fact, in this case, the answer is yes. There still exists an X and a Y with the same sort of relationship. And in fact, one can, from the operator alone, predict. Can predict the existence of Calabi-Yau manifold, so you can predict the topological invariance of X. So the Hodge numbers of X, the polarization H3, the second Chern class, the Euler number, and these numbers ND, you can compute from the operator alone, and you can also, from the operator alone, compute the zeta function of the fibers of a family which would belong to the operator. So, if you have only the operator, you can run certain calculation and find data to predict the existence of mirror pairs of manifolds with very specific properties. In fact, in this case, X is known, it's in the Grassmannian G25, the intersection, general intersection of two linear spaces and a quadratic space and a quadratic. And the Y can be given in the form of a complicated Laurent polynomial, giving you an honest incarnation for this equation. So we have an X and a Y for this one. But the question is, can it work for all the cases, and how do we find them? This is the big problem. So, up to... If in these four points, of course, very special, and then the fiber gets an additional node. They're both conical points. So you get, I didn't count completely, we have about, I estimate, cases where one has a perfect situation. So we have spaces weighted, complete intersections in weighted projective spaces. These are in these 14 cases, but although the already the 14th case, as mentioned by Chuck, is already, one has to allow a singularity. We have complete intersections in homogeneous spaces, like the Grassmannian. G mod P. In can be weighted versions of it, weighted Grassmannians, and you can look at Kruffians, weighted Kruffians. And plus exotics. And that's about what we have for the moment. So there are a lot of cases to be found. That's the point. We're working on an update of this list, making it more understandable and order them in the right way and giving the additional information. So let me comment on this third property. Why does the period function, so it's proposed period function, should have integral coefficients? Now, saying that if you have a variety, then you can look at the primes of bed reduction. Therefore, your power series you're going to get is going to have a certain denominator. This argument is not enough. So let me see as a y integral. Let me briefly comment on this, because there is a nice theorem here. So this is about integrality of power series. And Euler already remarks that this, in a letter to Goldbach, that this power series, the nth root of 1 minus n squared x, as I say, like t, that this is in effect has integral coefficients. Then Eisenstein has the following claim: if you take any function power series with ratio coefficients starting with 1, then one has, if phi is algebraic, then there exists an n such that phi of nt is integral. So this I call n integral. So by replacing the variable by n times the variable, you can make the power series integral. So this is, of course, much stronger than saying only denominators n appear, powers of n, because if you look at t squared t cubed 9, then 3 is the bed prime here, but the powers go up too quickly for this to hold. So this is not integral, not 3 integral. So this is a very precise property, and the simplest proof for this is over the so-called theory of diagonals. You say phi t is n diagonal, if the following holds: if phi of t is delta n of p over q, where p and q are polynomials and q is non-zero at the origin, and delta n is a very remarkable operation of a power series in n variables, a1, a n, x, i1, I So it maps a power series in n variables to power series in one variable by retaining only the diagonal coefficients. And so you can do taking a rational function, expand it in a power series, and then take only the diagonal terms. So, and now you have the following theorems of Fürstenberg in 1967, saying that a power series is algebraic if and only if phi is two diagonal. It's not very difficult, very nice exercise with residue calculus. So this is saying that, and of course, if it's n diagonal, then it will be an integral. Because if you start with a rational function, it's quite clear that you get an n integral power series. The second theorem, which I want to make some propaganda, this follows from work of Kristol, saying that period functions, if they are normalized like this, period integral for a family with 0 point of maximal unipotent monodromy, then so this is what we're studying all the time, then phi is a diagonal. So fibers of dimension n. So if you have a family of n-dimensional collabial manifolds, then the period function expansion around point of maximal unipotent monodromy is a diagonal. You can represent it as a diagonal. In particular, collabial threefold periods are 8 diagonals. So this is a remarkable theorem, I think. Let me give one example. In many cases, such a family is represented by a Laurent polynomial. If I take a Laurent polynomial, say, with integral coefficients with such a Laurent polynomial, then you can take the fiber in the torus and you can write the principal period as follows, as been explained at some talks. As a in the following form. And then you can expand this in the following way. So it comes down to computing constant coefficients of the powers of the of this Laurent polynomial. It's a very well-known calculation, so this is a very efficient way of calculating phi when this polynomial is not too complicated. And then you can also write it as the diagonal as the following rational function. So representing a collabial with a Laurent polynomial leads to a representation of the period as an n plus 1 diagonal. Therefore, in this case, it's completely obvious that you get an integral period after suitable scaling. So this is what I want to say about this integrality. So these power series have very strong integrality properties. So now we have this enormous list of operators and we want to compute or find x and y, realizing the Picard-Fuchs equation. And then this puts the question how to calculate the Picard-Fuchs equation. Well, Chuck Doran told us how to do it. So you can use the Dwork-Griffiths method. Which is due to Legendre. He did it for the Legendre did it for hyperelliptic curves, precisely. So, and then Clebsch and Gordon did it in homogeneous coordinates, but in three coordinates for curves in the plane. And then, of course, with the generalization. So this works for hypersurfaces in projective space which are smooth. You must be able to represent the cohomology by differential forms. And then the machine runs, and it has been implemented by Hossam Movsati in Singular, and it really works. So you can give any family of polynomials, it will compute you Picard-Fuchs equation. But if you take hypersurfaces, so you can generalized to complete intersections, although this is already much more cumbersome. And you can work in weighted projective spaces or in toric context. But the main problem with this is it presumes a sort of genericity of the equation. And it means the cohomology is usually big. And we want to find spaces with small cohomology, H12, one-dimensional, or the Picard number one-dimensional. So you have small cohomology. So they tend to be realized as resolutions of very singular members in other families. And then this method doesn't really work well, because the cohomology space is small, but you have to sort of make it generic, and then the cohomology space gets very big. So this is an approach which will not be so useful for what I want to do. And there is a good alternative, is to use expansion, finite period expansion. So what do? Assume we know this. We have calculated. It's not. There you have it. Is it still readable or not? No. Assume you can compute the period function, the coefficients an, of some integral. So I'm going to do what Chuck said you should not do, calculate these integrals. If we're going to find the Picard-Fuchs equation, you do not compute the integrals, you do the Griffiths work. But I do calculate these integrals. And then find PF, the operator P, the PIs are certain polynomials in the variable theta, quite generally. So we have this operator, so we have to determine these polynomials, or the coefficients of the operator, by solving the recursion, which you get by making this ansatz, so you get something like pi plus That is capital number, P-I-N. A sum over I. So, if you know the enough coefficients of your series, and you have an estimate for how big your operator is, you find the operator by computing enough of the period expansion. And I claim this is in many situations where a very singular variety, so where Griffith's work will be difficult, that in such situations, this method is superior. So it can be used where other cannot be used. So what are the good? So you can use any point to do the expansion. So you don't need to have the maximal unipotent monodromic point. So then this polynomial will be theta to the power 4. So in this case, you would have to calculate high powers of f and take the constant term. So this is being also zero mum point. Compute f. So you have to compute the constant term of powers of Laurent polynomials quickly. This has been implemented by my student Pavel Metelitsin, where you have very clever tricks to calculate these constant terms using reduction mod p and then reconstruction. And so this leads to the computation of certain new Picard-Fuchs equations from certain reflexive polytopes, which are very singular, new cases, new for Liszt. So he found some new ones from polytopes proposed by Batyreff and Kreutzer, which were not be possible to calculate earlier. In general, the wise thing is to use expansion around conifold point. Very often in a family of varieties, there will be one member which acquires a node. We have seen this picture several times. So if you now zoom in on this, you get following level sets here are going to the node. So, and here in this level set, there's a vanishing sphere, vanishing cycle, and in the n-dimensional case, it will be Sn. There will be a sphere contracted to the singular point, and what I propose to do is compute the integral around this vanishing sphere. So, and the theorem is this can be done algebraically. So let me theorem or principle, I do not want to formulate it in full generality. So it's a theorem in quotes, such a conifold expansion can be calculated algebraically. So, although it looks as we have to do an integral, in reality, this integral need not to be affected. So you get phi t is up to a proportionality a n, t n with a n certain rational coefficients, and I claim this a n can be computed algorithmically. And by a lazy algorithm, not involving Gruebner basis, nothing. It's a very simple algorithm, which calculates this AN. And if you can do this long enough, this will enable you to find Pika Fuchs operator. So rather than going into this general theory, which is in the development, I would say, I give examples. Let us first start with family of elliptic curves. I'll write it. Legendre normal form. So T is the parameter, and I have three roots, 0, T, and 1, and I imagine T to be very small. And the curve looking sort of like this. So there is a loop and then this part. Now, the integral, the period, is this integral. So how can then, the method 1, as followed by Legendre, is by reduction to find the differential equation, differentiating under the integral sign, and then reduction modulo, you get reduction of pole order and all that. But method 2 is just expanded as power series in T. So and for that, I substitute first x goes to T times x. Then this becomes integral 0, 1, T becomes a T in front, T, it gets get out. So you get the following 1 minus x, 1 minus x times the square root of 1 plus tx, 1 minus tx. So I write it in this way. And now this integral is between the two points which coalesce, and I've sort of made it standard. Now expand this in a power series. And then you get x to the power n divided by. And then t to the power n plus the coefficients you get from expanding the square root divided by 4. So sum over n. Okay, and now here we have a standard integral to do, which is Euler's beta integral, and by a small miracle, so you can write this gamma function, and if you calculate, it will be the following. It will produce another 2n over n squared. So you see again, the 16 makes this power series not integral, but replacing t by 16t would make the power series integral, as predicted by the theorem. It will always happen. So we have a very nice series, very well known function. This is also called the function K, elliptic function K, Legendre's elliptic function K. But for this talk, I will just write it f of t. I will need this function later. So this is the most elementary elliptic integral expanded in a series. So, now I want to illustrate how the method can be applied to a big class of examples. So this is joined with Slavik Cink. And to be honest, so we just sort of started, and we are in the stage where the calculations work, but we didn't have the time yet, I didn't find the time to have might produce a lot of calculations. So, but let me say what examples we're thinking of. So first of all is double octets. They were mentioned yesterday. If we take any double cover of P3 ramified over a hypersurface of degree 8, so this is a very simple accessible class of Clapeyron manifolds, which when F is generic, this will have a large cohomology. But if you make F very special, then the cohomology drops, if F becomes singular. The most singular sort of situation is where F gets into 8 planes. F, 8, is product of 8 planes. Product. Okay? So you move the planes around, and as long as you prevent 6 tuple points and 4-fold lines, it still has a Clapeyron resolution, projective even. So you can produce a lot of examples. The Hodge numbers can be computed by looking at the space of deformations of such configurations where you keep the singularity type constant. This has been explored by Christian Meyer, and reported in this book in the Fields publication, where he listed the rigid cases, and if we counted well, there were 11 of these some time ago, so I do not remember all this. So, for example, you can take the configuration consisting of the planes of a cube and add 2 parallel planes, say one plane going through one point, which is parallel to a plane going through 3 of the edges of the vertices of the tetrahedron. So then you get a rigid Clapeyron space, and you can find the weight 4 modular form. So this is H11 is 40. H12 is 0. But he also listed 63 one-parameter families. And you can see this one-parameter family very easy in this example. You can shift this plane and make it, while keeping it parallel to the other one. And what you then get is yt. So this is, say, y0. And yt has Hodge numbers, h11 is 39, h12 is 1. By losing this fourfold point, the Hodge numbers change, and now you have an obvious one-parameter family, and what you here have is a vanishing tetrahedron. And now you you can calculate this integral. So by going to if you go to the double cover, then this real tetrahedron is covered by a copy of the three sphere. So you can see the vanishing three sphere here, analogous to in the interval. If you have this elliptic curve, you have a vanishing line segment, and lying over it is a circle. The same here, lying over this tetrahedron is a three sphere. I'm going to calculate that integral. And what you get, say if we write with P, if you have such a situation where a vanishing tetrahedron, where the other part of the quartic, of the octic, stays away, so this does not go to the origin. Then you have here three coordinate planes plus a fourth plane. This makes up the tetrahedron, and for t equals zero, the tetrahedron degenerates to a point. Now, so we have a tetrahedron tt, and now you can calculate the period of the canonical differential form over this tetrahedron, and what you get is integral t, and it works like with elliptic curves. So here I use the inhomogeneous form of the equation. So you just calculate this integral, and you do again x goes to t times x, y goes to t times y, z goes to t times z, and then expand this in a power series, so you get phi of t is then you can get out some factors of t, and you get t times integral over the standard tetrahedron, and then expand this in a power series, you get x k y l v m times c k l m times t to the I, and then sum over, these are the coefficients of the expansion of p, so so now, by this substitution, you become the standard tetrahedron, and we have only to calculate the standard integral. And this is a generalized version for the beta integral. So you can compute this in terms of gamma function. And so, some. This is in fact gamma k. Times gamma half divided by gamma plus 2 times C I K L M T I. So, and if you do it, you find pi squared t times 1 plus a1t a2t squared plus the ai's are rational coefficients. And this is a very easy algorithm because this is just expansion. Only expansion. We only do power series expansion. And then read up the coefficients. So the only problem is that the memory in your computer blows up, but nowadays memory is so cheap, so it is a very simple algorithm but very memory intensive. But then you can do this, and if you do EG, for example, for a very simple case, which is, by the way, not exactly the example we have with the square up there, but this is the one I had in my notes. If you do this, just to show that it is pi squared see. So, it's very easy to compute, and you can calculate the Picard-Fuchs equation. You need not many coefficients in this case. Now it is an expansion around ordinary double point, or around the node, so it's not maximal unipotent monodromy. There is a Jordan block of size 1 in the monodromy. You see immediately, because of this operator, you see immediately the weight filtration. One cohomology class has lower weight, one has higher weight, and in the middle you have a Jordan block. So you precisely see the Hodge structure in this period. Well, I will not write completely, it's just to give an idea. It's not very complicated operator, since it must be T. Not many terms, 2 squared. And then one other term ending with this. So this is a very nice way of calculating. And now the interesting thing is, this operator is not maximal unipotent monodromy at the origin. So what has this operator to do with what we originally wanted? Not much, you would say. But now, the point is, this operator has a point of maximal unipotent monodromy at t is 1. So the critical points of this operator . Well, you can imagine, if you go with this plane through this cube, then there are certain positions where it intersects other vertices, where the operator, there something happens, that the operator are the singular points of the operator, and you find vertical points, or singular points, 0, 1, 2, 3, and infinity. So it has 5 singular points. And for one of these, I forgot which one, say it's this one, we get a maximal unipotent monodromy. This corresponds to the situation where this moving plane hits head-on one other plane of the configuration. Now, for many years, I already had seen this degeneration, this plane mapping going to the other plane, but I always thought this is not maximal unipotent monodromy, because you have only 2 devices. And to have maximal unipotent monodromy, you need sort of a maximum number of devices intersecting. So I was always thinking this operator is not interesting, because it is not maximal unipotent monodromy. But it has. And the reason is, your fiber gets non-reduced, and you have to do base change. And then in that process, a complicated process, you will arrive a sphere, so you will get maximum unipotent monodromy. But the interesting thing is that it is very easy, much easier to calculate this way than first concentrating on this maximum unipotent point, where the geometry is complicated. Here, geometry around this vanishing tetrahedron, very simple. So you can calculate it, you can just now transform. Yeah, now you move, you get another operator. I didn't write it down. But transform to form theta 4. And I didn't write it down here, but it's not important. But in this case, it appears already in the list. So I'm in a complete win-win-win situation, because there can happen 3 things. First thing that can happen is I find the calculation works like this. I find a point of maximal unipotent monodromy, and I get an operator in the list. Then in that case, I found a geometric realization of one of the operators. Second thing that can happen, I find point of maximal unipotent monodromy, and it is a new operator, then I'm also happy because I have a bet with Almqvist that there are more than 500. And I win this bet if we reach 500. Or the third possibility, which I believe will not occur, the operator has nowhere a point of maximal unipotent monodromy, but in that case, we have made Jan Roder happy because we exhibited in family with of Calabi-Yau's without a point of maximal unipotent monodromy. So, yeah, I see that the time is up. It's a pity that I cannot tell about the computation with fiber products. There are many situations where fiber products of rational surfaces with H12 equal 1. From these, I also had the idea that they would not be interesting, this one parameter family. But it appears that you can calculate pretty much in the same way, where if you have the two vibrations, well, maybe I stop here because it's involved to explain, but you can do identify the vanishing cycles in precisely the same way, and you can write down the period expansion in a similar way, and you find the operators, although you don't have equations for the variety itself, you just have equations for the factors. This is sufficient. Okay, this will hopefully lead to many new realizations and operators. So I stop here.
Did you say how you got the 500 operators?
400. We have now 400. no, I didn't. There are various methods. One is, at the beginning we did well-known cases of lower order operation, take Hadamard product. So you take, if you have two power series, which both satisfy differential equations, ANTN and BNTN, then you look at the power series AN times BN times T to the power N. So you multiply coefficient-wise. This is Hadamard product. Many of the operators are Hadamard products. So in a way, they decompose into lower order operators. This can usually also be interpreted as convolutions with families of elliptic curves. So these will be covered by this fiber product situation usually. But there are also situations where fiber products with K3s and so. Like, if you look at this one, this is a typical Hadamard product. Because this, both of them satisfy second order equations. This is the operator I mentioned, this is the elliptic, the Legendre normal form. And this is a family of elliptic curves, one of the Bouville families. And so geometrically, this is a representation of fiber product. And, but now we can do much more exotic fiber products. But how did we get them? By such tricks and by wild guessing. Take a binomial sum like this, but change a little bit, make 2n here, and playing around more binomial coefficients. And you can get very good at it, so get Almqvist. And then you find just operators. And then by analogy, if such an operator exists, then probably also the other ones. Believing in the Platonic triples, if there is half, a third, a sixth, then there will be also a half, a fourth, and things like that. Computer search by just putting an operator with unknown coefficients and looking for an integral solution. Various tricks, Laurent polynomials, all the known geometrical cases are in the table, but we going to have a better table where for each operator there is a lot of information, where there are usually more realizations of one operator.
If you look at the predicted half number, you have 400 plus cases.
Yeah, there are many which sort of stand out. And recently, some were found, which I had predicted with Christian von Enkevoort, where you had the operator, we calculate the invariance, and now they were found by you, isn't it? I think this was the most recent addition, but he looked at weighted profions. But what comes after profions? Then we get into really exotic calendars. We have no control, so we have complete intersections, homogeneous spaces, profions. So it almost seems that I do not know many other things to try there. Yes, projective.
Right, exactly. So, in the context of the other construction, by the bottom construction, that won't be the case in general.
That's right.
Your methods, are they in any sense sensitive?
No. So, I had another example where you have even isogenies in fiber products, of course, give rise to different integral structures. And, in one version, there is you can either be the fish or the aquarium, but not both. So in one case, you get a one-parameter family, but a non-projective resolution. And if you go by isogeny, you get a higher dimensional family, but a subfamily, and a projective resolution. But you cannot have both. So these are clearly indications of situations where maybe there is not a real Clavial manifestation, but still of this hot, this motive, this Clavial motive, has all the integrality properties one knows as for ordinary manifolds. Like your 14th case, is it? Yes. In fact, by this method, by singling out a specific period, we get an integral structure given by this specific vector. And the monodromy transforms of it will generate a lattice of rank 4. So this will automatically give you the variation of Hodge with a marking of a specific integral vector. And then by applying the monodromy, you will get a lattice. Might be not, there might be other lattices, like if you have an isogeny, then. But that's another advantage of having this specific over as compared to the Dwork method, which gives only the differential equation. But this is differential equation plus specific integral solution. This is, in fact, better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but GKZ is very, very general, so probably any equation of algebraic geometry, differential equation of algebraic geometry, is a specialization of it. No. And we have a very high rank thing, and then you're looking for very tiny sub things in there. And if you have to compute in the big thing, that's difficult. But this keeps the calculation very small.